Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. You know, most of us would never think to ask our doctors if they're getting paid to promote the very drugs that they prescribe us. But maybe we should be asking. The news organization ProPublica has compiled a database of doctors who get paid by seven of the big pharmaceutical companies to speak out about brand name medications. And some of those physicians have made more than $300,000 doing it over the last 18 months. Now, to see a chart of the New York City doctors who are paid the most by these drug companies, we have it on our website, and you can go to WNYC.org. WNYC is one of ProPublica's partners in this ongoing investigation. And here with us now to talk about some of those New York City doctors and the underlying issues here is WNYC reporter Elsa Chang. Elsa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What exactly are the doctors getting paid to do?
Well, they get paid about $1,000 at a time to show up at a restaurant and talk in front of a group of other doctors and basically whip through about 80 PowerPoint slides that go through the benefits and the side effects of the particular company product that they're paid to talk about. What's important to note is all of these slides are written by the company. Now, the company says it's important for them to write the slides because they have to make sure all the content complies with FDA regulations and that everything's accurate. But what happens is a lot of these doctors feel straitjacketed, at least the ones that I've talked to. One doctor, Stephen Freitas, who recently resigned from the Speaker's Bureau, he said he felt like a monkey just standing up there and reading slides. It used to be a lot freer. He used to be able to draft some of his own slides and bring in some of his own material. But these companies have really kind of cracked down on these doctors to just keep to the points that they prepare on the slides for them.
And what do they get paid per performance?
It does vary, but I would say the average, talking to several doctors over the last month, was about $1,000 per talk.
So how do they decide who does this?
Well, that's a good question. The drug companies say they pick the most knowledgeable experts out there to talk about the drugs. But what I have found is doctors have come forward who are involved in this speaking, as well as former drug company sales representatives who have said in whistleblower lawsuits that what these companies do a lot is they target the doctors who are already high prescribers of the drug.
Uh-huh.
Doctors who would probably say good things about the drug anyway. One doctor I interviewed, Dr. Richard Schloss, he said basically what they do is they go through the pharmacy records. They notice that he was already a high prescriber of the antipsychotic drug Geadon, and it's made by Pfizer. A Pfizer rep came up to him and asked him, well, you know, I noticed that you are prescribing a lot of Geadon. Tell me what you like about the drug. And he said some nice things about it. And it was then that the Pfizer rep asked him, do you want to speak for us?
So what's wrong with that? If they're going to doctors who are already having success with patients with a medication and say, we want you to do a training or information session for other physicians on why this is working for you, it sounds like maybe, you know, the chicken came before the egg. The doctor's success came before he was being paid by the pharmaceutical companies to speak on their behalf.
Well, the doctors that I talked to, they did say that they believe in the drug. But what's interesting is sort of how the speaking has interacted with their prescribing behavior. So, again, this doctor, Dr. Richard Schloss, he's actually admitted that since he began speaking, he's prescribing the drug even more. In fact, he's prescribing Geadon, he estimates, about 10% more. And he says, you know, I mean, it's natural. You speak so much about the drug, you learn more and more about it. And he's basically, he says when he prescribes patients, it just pops into his head more when he's doing prescriptions. And there's a lot of research out there that when doctors receive even modest payments, it does have an influence on their prescribing behavior. Though all the doctors I talk to say that they believe that when they're prescribing these drugs, that they are believing the patient really, really should have this particular drug. But, you know, there's a debate if that's truly, truly a sincere answer.
You mean it might actually affect the behavior of the doctors who are getting paid to do the speaking more than the much larger number of doctors who are coming to the talks to hear them promote the drug?
Well, I don't know if it's they're getting influenced more, but they're certainly getting influenced as well.
Yeah.
You know, on the other side, the doctors who are listening, when I talked to the vice dean at Columbia's medical school, she says these talks, they generally focus on one specific product. So especially like, let's take antidepressants. There's so many antidepressants on the market. When you go to a talk that, say, focuses only on Cymbalta, it's hard to say that that's a truly educational talk. I mean, you want to know about the comparisons across all the antidepressants and, you know, all the side effects and all the benefits. That would be a much more informative talk than
And that's not what's going on.
Right. Well, some of the doctors say, well, what's going on is the slides focus on the company product. One doctor I talked to said, yeah, sometimes he'll mention other products, but it's usually in response to when people ask questions. Mm-hmm. But the slides themselves take the bulk of the presentation, and they are focused on a single product.
I want to open up the phones, and we'd like to hear from doctors. This is a fairly widespread practice, so if you're a physician, have you ever attended one of these drug company-sponsored talks? Have you ever given one yourself? Do you think they are generally honest enterprises? Are they educational? Or is it just about companies trying to sell specific drugs? If you go with some skepticism, how do you process the information once you hear it? We'd also love to hear from people in the pharmaceutical industry. What's your take? Are doctors an invaluable resource? Why not leave this to the drug company reps? Why have doctors who don't actually work for you, at least not on staff, do these talks? And patients, do you ask your doctors what they're up to? If they have any financial relationships with pharmaceutical companies before they prescribe you or as they prescribe you a medication, do you care? Doctors, pharma reps, patients, you're all welcome in. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For WNYC reporter Elsa Chang, who's been working with the group ProPublica on this database of doctors who get paid by seven of the big pharmaceutical companies to speak about their medications. And Elsa, you also found that 4 of the 10 highest paid New York City speakers in the ProPublica database are Columbia University professors.
That's correct.
Does that mean they practice at Columbia Presbyterian?
Well, there's a number of hospitals that are affiliated with the medical school at Columbia. So the doctor that I talked to, he's actually a urologist at Roosevelt Hospital. But he and the 3 other physicians on this top earners list were all affiliated. We're all on the faculty of Columbia's medical school at various hospitals.
Was this a surprise to Columbia? Did you tell them?
I did. I actually went to the Vice Dean of Academic Affairs, Dr. Ann Taylor. She oversees compliance with the school's ethics guidelines. I wouldn't say that she was shocked. They certainly know that there are doctors generally in the field who do this. These talks aren't like a big mystery. But Columbia's current policy right now, quote, strongly discourages its faculty members from doing these talks. So I showed her the names of the 4 people that are on this list. You know, she personally couldn't comment on any individual doctor, but starting January of 2011, Columbia is going to try to enforce a prohibition against all faculty members from taking company money to talk about specific company products. I asked her, well, how will you actually enforce that policy? She says the faculty actually is still trying to discuss how to enforce it. And this is sort of a problem a lot of medical ethicists say. It's great that academic institutions are beginning to take a stand on these talks, but enforcement is actually where the teeth are, and let's see if that actually happens.
Here is a drug company rep, a pharmaceutical company rep, calling in from Queens. Thank you very much for calling. You're on WNYC.
Yeah, how are you doing today? I'm a bit confused because your guest is sort of implying that there's something unethical what's going on. A few points. There are hundreds of drugs out there. So the only way for physicians to actually know about new products is to actually come out and hear the information. They can't possibly hear it on a daily basis while seeing all their patients. 2, there's no quid pro quo. Physicians aren't required to write if they're speaking for a company. They're doing so because they believe the drug will actually benefit some of their patients. So unless your guests come up with a better idea of how they can get that information out there and remove this cloud of some type of impropriety that's going on, I don't understand what her point is.
Elsa?
Yeah. I mean, well, first, I just want to respond that a lot of these doctors I talked to, they say that the slides almost completely mirror the package inserts that come with the drugs. So it's not like these actual slides are putting or disseminating information that's so new and so inaccessible that if a physician did not physically show up to one of these talks, that information would never get to that physician. Secondly, you know, that's a very fair point. I agree that, you know, when a doctor goes to these talks, he or she is receiving information. And for the most part, as far as I can tell, the information is accurate. It's all FDA approved. However, educators in, you know, at elite medical schools like Columbia say that these talks aren't truly educational. The integrity of the educational process at these talks really isn't there because these talks are focused on one product. So if a physician really wanted to go to a talk and be more thoroughly informed about the range, the whole class of competing products out there for a particular use, these talks don't quite get to that.
Caller, do you want to say one more thing or no?
Actually, that's why they have grand rounds so that physicians could get an idea of what the disease state is. But if you're hosting an event for a particular product, one, it's non-competitive, and two, it's to just enforce the benefits of the drug. Again, it's education about the product that can benefit a patient. If you have 10 drugs, Brian, if you have 10 drugs in one disease state, let's just say, and all the drugs have some similarly work the same way, but one actually can benefit a patient and improve their outcome. That's the total goal.
They should know.
They should know. It's real simple.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate your input on this. Now, Elsa, the argument, I guess, is that it's kind of a subliminal or sort of a subconscious effect that doctors are going to these things with all good intentions to learn information that they will incorporate into a bigger picture in their practices, but somehow, you know, they don't even get how they're being biased?
Well, that's, you know, definitely one of the claims out there. A doctor can only go to so many talks, and if the talks that he or she goes to only focus on a small group of products that are meant for a particular use, yeah, you could say that the doctor is getting sort of lopsided information about the whole class of agents or prescriptions or medications that are available for a particular use. And, you know, what's interesting is Dr. Richard Schloss, this psychiatrist I was just telling you about, who says his prescriptions for Geodon has increased the more he talks about it. You could say that effect, this subliminal effect that you're talking about is kind of happening to him.
So this doctor, was he saying that he sort of caught himself at this and turned around and said, oh my goodness, what am I doing?
No, I mean, Dr. Schloss says, I believe in Geodon. I came into these talks believing in Geodon. Yet the more I talk about it, the more I learn about it, the more I'm reminded of its benefits. And so I prescribe it more. It pops into my head more. So, I mean, you could say that happens to maybe to a lesser effect to the people listening to the talk.
Here's a doctor, and in fact one who says she used to be at Columbia. Catherine, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Yeah, this is a great topic. On one hand, I agree with the pharmaceutical reps in that certainly when I was an intern and a resident and working a zillion hours a week, when the drug reps would show up with a pizza and talk about one of the 92 medications that come out a week, I was exceedingly grateful. I don't think they can bring us pizza anymore. Now that I'm out in practice, I had this happen a couple years ago where a pharmaceutical rep approached me and said, that I could make quite a bit of money speaking if my prescribing would center more on one of two agents that his company represented. And I said, well, you know, I give whatever the patient needs. And he said, well, you know, it's up to you. It's just something for you to think about. And the clear implication was if I were to prescribe these other medications, I could start raking in some sorely needed money to throw at my student loans. I was pretty shocked because for the most part, the pharmaceutical reps are straight up and but I've seen it happen. I saw another physician who was representing, who spoke for a drug, and he was heading up kind of a long-term facility. Every patient maybe not every patient there, they were all on this medication. It had definite side effects. It was not the number one thing that you want to prescribe. And when he would give his talks, he was reading the package insert, and I raised questions, and he just shot me down, and it was clear he was making fees, and he wanted to continue making them, so it's a double-edged
right.
sword.
So you're saying
on the ethics,
that in order to get in order to speak for the drug, you had to first up your prescription volume of the drug. Is that part of what you said?
Absolutely. I mean, they're not going to choose me to speak unless I didn't even know they kept track of this stuff.
Yeah, and Catherine, I'm going to leave it there. But how do they know? You say they go to the doctors who prescribe the drugs the most. How do they know?
Well, market research firms actually get pharmacy records. It's totally legal, and they sell those pharmacy records to pharmaceutical companies. And so the pharmaceutical companies basically track who are the highest prescribers of their products, and then they contact them.
Looking at the chart that you have of New York City doctors who are earning the most from drug companies, and again, listeners, you can see what Elsa and ProPublica found on our website. Go to WNYC.org. But looking at this chart of New York City doctors who are earning the most from drug companies, what stands out to you?
Well, I mean, right, reporting the story, what stood out to me was the proportion. 4 out of 10 were associated with an elite medical school, Columbia. Just one caveat about that chart, ProPublica is continuing to update its database. This chart was all accurate as of October 20th. I think last night they dumped a little bit more data, so I don't know if that actually affects this list, but it may.
Okay, I don't know. But it looks like GlaxoSmithKline and Eli Lilly are paying the highest number of top-paid New York City doctors, and that almost all the doctors on the list are taking in money from more than one company.
Right, that's definitely true. What's interesting, just a point we didn't cover yet, Eli Lilly and Glaxo, they actually had some of the highest numbers of speakers in the database who had very serious transgressions on their state records. Eli Lilly, since this story has broken, has said that they are now going to hire an outside company to help screen their speakers, especially the state records of their speakers. So, it was definitely interesting to see Eli Lilly on so many of the top earner names.
Let's talk to another physician, Ken in Stamford. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a couple points and one to add, Ray, what the speaker said a few minutes ago. I find that, I guess, part of my point is that most of the docs who go to these meetings go with some, you know, we're not ventriloquist dummies. We go with some skepticism. We know that there's usually a nice dinner associated with it, and we go to meet our colleagues in the community, and we share information with our colleagues about the drug being talked about. And the thing that I beg to differ or add a little subtle point to what the speaker said, when you go to CME meetings at various universities, I find that there's more problem with figuring out the bias of the professor than there is at the pharmaceutical drug meetings. Because if you go to most of these meetings, you list even some of the full professors, tenured professors at the medical schools, they have voluminous listings at the front of the program of the grants they're getting from pharmaceutical companies. So when they give their talk, you know, there's always a question, well, is there a bias? And it may be a more subtle bias than when you're simply at a meeting. Those people are usually more, you know, they're eminent researchers and professors, whereas the ones who are giving the talks in the community are either docs from the community or people who have.
So how do you follow up, doctor? Do you take this information and your professional skepticism and say, well, okay, that's all interesting. Now I'm going to go and see how the competing drugs from other pharmaceutical companies actually stack up by looking at the literature or seeing how, you know, the drug versus no treatment compares. I mean, what do you do with that skepticism
exactly,
once you've heard
the
pitch?
The thing is, usually these are drugs that are already out in circulation. Mm-hmm. Some have been out for quite a while. And so
they're just trying to increase
so the
use.
Benefit of going to the meeting is the colleagues from your community who are there. You know, you talk to them. Gee, what do you think about Geodon? You know, do you use it very much? Frankly, I don't. I don't find much use it. And they talk about it. And I trust their feedback about their own experience. So we get it from there. We get it from journals, and then we get it from our own experience.
Does anything raise a red flag for you?
Pardon?
Does anything raise a red flag for you, either at the events
yes,
or when?
Sometimes. Yeah, well, I used to be in academics, and I used to do research, and So maybe, I don't know whether I'm a little more subtle or sensitive to it. But yeah, there's some, most of these talks, as I say, are relatively forthright. And as the speaker said, I mean, they present these slides from the drug company that just have to be regulated in some way. Occasionally you get one that is so biased that you just, you know, you just throw it out. Either you speak up about it or you just sort of sit there and
then
enjoy
I guess
the
it backfires in those cases if other people react the way you do. Thank you for calling in. And Elsa, before we're out of time, just because a doctor is in this database doesn't mean they're a bad physician. Doesn't mean they're misprescribing medication.
That's right.
Plus, this database only has information from 7 drug companies, and there are more than 70 around the country. ProPublica is still, as you said, compiling it and adding to it. So what do you suggest that patients should or could actually do with the information that you're presenting?
Yeah. Thank you for making those clarifications. Certainly, your doctor could be a great doctor, even though he works for a pharmaceutical company. You know, go ahead and ask. If your doctor especially is prescribing you a brand name drug that's expensive, ask if there are alternative brand names or generics. You know, one doctor I talked to, he's a firm believer in brand name drugs over generics. He said that in his field, generics just aren't as effective. So there are valid reasons why doctors may want to prescribe brand name drugs. But basically, it's just one more piece of information for patients. If you know your doctor's getting money from pharma, just ask him what the alternatives are, what the side effects and benefits of those competitive products are.
Again, to see a chart of the New York City doctors who are getting paid the most by 7 pharmaceutical companies, you can go to WNYC.org. Dollars for Docs is an ongoing investigation by ProPublica and other news organizations. Partners include the Dallas Morning News, the Detroit News, the San Francisco Chronicle, Health News Florida, Colorado Public Radio, and WNYC. WNYC reporter Elsa Chang, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, attention holiday flyers. Are you ready to be body searched? James Fallows from The Atlantic will help take your calls on the airport pat-down controversy that's been so much in the news. Most people, by the way, will not be affected by this, but we'll explain it and we'll ask, are you for more privacy or more security? Stay tuned.